Management, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. In today's episode, we will complete explanation of Surah Ma'arij, which we had started a few weeks ago. Number 70 in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran, this surah has 44 ayahs and was revealed in Mecca, although, according to exegetes, some of its ayahs were revealed in Medina. The title of the surah derives from the word Ma'arij, mentioned in Ayah 3 regarding the places of ascent or lofty stations where, by the permission of the Almighty Creator, angels can ascend. The surah focuses on the Day of Resurrection and warns the polytheists and disbelievers of the dire consequences of their lack of faith, while defining the characteristics of the people of paradise and hell. The opening ayahs concern the sending down of torments in this world, such as the one that befell a denier of the divinely designated velayat or leadership of the Prophet's immaculate cousin and son-in-law, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him. We start from where we left you last week, and here are ayahs 36, 37, 38, and 39.
فَمَا لِلَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا قِبَلَكَ مُهْطَعِينَ عَنِ الْيَمِينِ وَعَنِ الشِّمَالِ عَزِينَ أيطمع كل امرئ منهم أن يدخل جنة نعيم كلا إنا خلقناهم مما يعلمون.
What is the matter with the faithless that they scramble toward you from the right and the left in batches? Does each man among them hope to enter the garden of bliss? Never. We indeed created them from the base of matter, what they know. If you might recall, in our explanation of the previous ayahs of this surah last Friday, we said belief in the Day of Resurrection and the Final Judgment is the key to salvation, and thus a true believer is always cognizant of God Almighty while aware of the rights of others in his or her wealth, especially of the poor and the needy, since the path to paradise is adherence to divine decrees, observance of the ritual prayers, abstinence from sins, and positive interaction with others. The ayahs that we recited to you now point to the wishful thinking of the polytheist and other disbelievers that their better standard of life in the world will ensure for them a place in paradise in case there is the resurrection day, in which they do not actually believe while scoffing at the concept of paradise. So what makes the sinners and disbelievers who lead a depraved and desultory life think of themselves as superior to others when they know fully well that all human beings are created from a worthless and unclean drop, and it is only the correct set of beliefs, coupled with virtuous deeds rather than wealth, that ensures salvation in the hereafter? From these ayahs, we learn that, number one, the unmatched eloquence and timeless wisdom of the Noble Quran made even those who mocked and belied the Prophet to listen to its recitation, not out of belief, but in the wishful longing for paradise on the basis of their wealth and power. Number two, a true believer is never boastful of his deeds and is always humble before the Almighty Creator. And number three, arrogance and vanity are restrained when a person thinks of his or her common origin from a worthless and unclean drop of liquid. Now we invite you to listen to ayahs 40 and 41 of the same surah.
فلا أقسم برب المشارق والمغارب إنا لقادرون على أن نبدل خيرا منهم وما نحن بمسبوقين.
Therefore I swear by the Lord of the East and the West that we are able to replace them by better than them, and we are not to be outmaneuvered. Here Allah swears by the East and the West, in plural rather than singular form, in order to emphasize the different points of sunrise and sunset every day of the year, which is obvious for anyone keen on scientific calculations of the cardinal points that become fully evident even for ordinary persons at the time of the winter and summer solstices, when the sun reaches its zenith in the Tropic of Cancer and the Tropic of Capricorn, respectively. Besides these two distinct solstices on December 22nd and June 21st, which mark the longest night and the longest day, vice versa in the southern hemisphere, there are two spring and autumn equinoxes on March 21st and September 22nd respectively, when the day and the night are of equal duration. These scientific facts, in accordance with the Earth's orbit around the Sun as it rotates on its axis, were proven by the Noble Quran over 14 centuries ago. This is to awaken human conscience to the power of the Almighty Creator, who, as the next ayah says, can easily replace the wrongdoers with better ones, and is able to resurrect all humanity from even scattered bones and dust for the judgment day. These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, the Noble Quran, though not a book of astronomy, mentions scientific facts with accuracy in order to point to the spherical shape of planet Earth and its orbit around the sun. And number two, we must never consider ourselves better than others, thinking that Allah has not created anyone superior to us, since He is able to replace us by others. In conclusion of this week's episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, let us listen to ayahs 42, 43, and 44 marking the end of Surah Ma'arij as well.
فَذَرْهُمْ يَخُوضُوا وَيَلْعَبُوا حَتَّى يُلَاقُوا يَوْمَهُمُ الَّذِي يُوْعَدُونَ يَوْمَ يَخْرُجُونَ مِنَ الْأَجْدَاثِ سِرَاعًا كَأَنَّهُمْ إِلَى نُصُبٍ يُوفِضُونَ خَاشِعَةً أَبْصَارُهُمْ تَرْهَقُهُمْ ذِلَّةٌ ذَلِكَ الْيَوْمُ الَّذِي كَانُوا يُوَعَدُونَ
So leave them to gossip and play until they encounter their day, which they are promised, the day when they emerge from the graves, hastening as if racing towards a target, with a humble look in their eyes, overcast by abasement. This is the day they had been promised. These closing ayahs of Surah Ma'arij warn the obdurate disbelievers who mock the prophets, their moral guidelines, and the day of resurrection, of the terrible shock in store on the promised day, when mankind will emerge from the graves and race in a bewildered state. The prophet is asked to leave the intransigent disbelievers to their fate after his relentless endeavors to awaken their conscience through presentation of rational facts. On the day of resurrection, the disbelievers will be the real losers, with their eyes lowered with fear owing to the intensity of horror of the surroundings, with humility, while they shall be enwrapped by ignominy and humility. From these ayahs, we learn the following points. Number one, guidance is necessary till a certain stage, after which the intransigent disbelievers should be left to their own fate. Number two, emergence from the graves means physical resurrection of all the dead. And number three, the day of resurrection has been promised with certitude by the Almighty Creator, so we ought to be prepared for it through good deeds. Dear listeners, next week we will start with Surah Nuh, which refers to the mission of Prophet Noah. Dear listeners, goodbye and God bless you.
Eight-year defensive Iranian combatant.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
A Palestinian referendum to determine the destiny of Palestine and Palestinians everywhere. That was Iran's official proposal 3 years ago, when even Palestinians would have found it far-fetched. But the U.S.-Israeli genocide, apparently in retaliation to Operation Al-Aqsa flood of October 7th, the world has been alerted to the long-suffered plight of Palestinians. And to end the shelling of Gaza and insecurity in Israeli-occupied lands, the referendum can work as a blood-free solution to the Palestine dispute that actually began in 1948. A referendum can't go down well with the Israeli regime because it uses each and every opportunity to further occupy Palestinian lands. It has not even heeded to UN resolutions against illegal settlements. But as far as international concerns go, Iran's proposal is a just and practical solution for peace. If the international community applies resolve rather than issue resolutions, it can hold Israel to a referendum. Hello and welcome. You're watching Iran Today. In this episode, we'll be diagnosing conflict resolution Iranian style. But why should the Islamic Republic of Iran be so concerned about the Palestinian issue? In other words, what is the significance of Palestine for Iran in the first place? We asked this question from Mr. Mossadegh Mossadeghpour, an Iranian political analyst.
Certainly, the issue of Palestine is not only important for the Islamic Republic of Iran, but for all Muslims, free people, and even for Christians. Their Islamic, Christian, and even Jewish sanctities exist, and they should be respected. The regime we have seen clearly aims to dominate the region, disrupt regional relations, and render the area unsafe and unstable. Undoubtedly, from this perspective, the Islamic Republic of Iran has an Islamic viewpoint on the Palestinian issue, and its other perspective is a humane perspective. In my opinion, the Islamic Republic of Iran pays more attention to the Islamic viewpoint on Palestine. Ultimately, there was a nation called Palestine, and Palestinians lived there. There are documents from Israeli authorities that indicate Palestinian origins, and it's evident and documented that a land named Palestine existed, not Israel. Israel is a fabricated name.
But the Palestinian issue can also be significant for Tehran from yet another point of view, Mr. Mehdi Shakibayi, the director of Media Cultural Center, told us. He is also a member of the International Union of NGOs Supporting Palestine.
Considering that Palestine is an Islamic country and Jerusalem is the first Qibla of Muslims, and moreover the injustices that have occurred in this country, this matter holds utmost importance for the Islamic Republic of Iran from three aspects: human, national, and religious. Religion, of course, is a significant factor. The issue of the establishment of the Israeli regime in the region, initiated by the victorious powers of World War II with the aim of exploiting and plundering the region's wealth, holds significance for the Islamic Republic of Iran. Fundamentally, the philosophy behind the regime's establishment is to confront any country opposing the interests of America in the region, or opposing the interests of the colonial powers victorious in World War II. Hence, from a national perspective, the Israeli regime could pose a threat to Iran's national security. Thus, the issue of Palestine can be viewed from this angle as well.
With this resolution or referendum, the decades-long occupation of Palestine may end. But it will happen in a civilized fashion for both sides. It will bring peace to the region, and it may not be the worst thing for Jews. Because in determining their destiny, Palestinians may vote for Israeli settlers to stay in a reassembled Palestine. This is Dr. Majid Abbasi, the Dean of the Law and Political Science Faculty at Allameh Tabatabai University.
The solution proposed by the leadership was to hold free elections in Palestine. All Palestinian refugees who left Palestine after 1948 have the right to return to the occupied lands, have the right to vote and form the future government in Palestine. You know that since the regime's establishment, the Israelis have imposed several major wars on the region. In 1948, in 1956, 1967, and 1973. These are four major wars imposed on the region, and the regime still continues with its warmongering. The solution referred to by the leadership is not about eliminating Israel or Jews. The Islamic Republic of Iran has no issue with Jews, but it has a problem with Zionists, who are invaders, occupiers, and have deprived the Palestinian people of their right to determine their own destiny. They kill women, children, and non-combatants in Palestine. The leader's proposal is based on democracy. Western countries claim that democracy is essential for them. And in democracy, it's said that every individual has the right to vote. According to this proposal, both Palestinians and Jews present in the occupied territories can participate in a referendum. They can vote, and naturally, the future government, whatever it might be, will be the legitimate government of Palestine. And this is the best outcome that could happen.
Now, what is the referendum all about? It's exactly that, a referendum, or democratic vote to uphold Palestinians' undeniable right to self-determination by the original inhabitants of Palestine before 1948, when Israel was created. It has nothing to do with throwing Jews into the sea or setting half of Palestine on fire. That sort of method was applied by Nazi Ashkenazi Europeans and threatened by Arabs who saw their brothers being thrown out of their homes by nominal Jews pouring in from Europe. Mr. Mossadeghpour told us anti-Semitic words attributed to Iran are nothing but distorted remarks with hidden agendas.
The proclamation regarding Israel's disappearance within 25 years was misconstrued, erroneously implying Iran's direct intent to orchestrate this event, a notion starkly divergent from the recent clarification by the leader. Contrary to the misleading perception, the leader's statements harbor distinct connotations as articulated in their recent address. However, intentional or inadvertent misconstructions persist both within and outside Iran, amplified by opposition factions and even within the Zionist sphere. This skewed interpretation perpetuates a narrative of existential threat, positioning Iran as the agent of destruction. This narrative, propagated intentionally or otherwise, fosters calls for increased armament of Israel, justified as an indisputable right to self-defense. Notably, the leader's declarations stem from historical contexts and governance experiences, yet these nuanced references are often overlooked or misrepresented.
نظرات جمهوری اسلامی درباره منطقه که صحبت میکنن به دروغ میگن که ایران میگه که باعثی یهودی ها رو یا صهیونیست ها رو به دریا بیرزن نه این حرف و دیگران یه وقتای قبلا کسایی از عرب ها گفتن ما هیچ وقت نگفتیم اینو ما کسی رو به دریا نمیرزیم ما میگیم نظر نظر مردم نظر اون دولتی که با آراء مردم فلسطین تشکیل شد تصمیم گیری خواهد کرد درباره مردمی که اونجا هستن از کشورهای دیگه اومدن ممکنه همشون رو بگه بمونید توی فلسطین.
The process of holding a referendum was outlined in 5 points before Iran's leader of the revolution Ayatollah Khamenei pressed on with its importance. The first point is that all original Palestinians, be they Muslim, Christian, or Jewish, are entitled to participating in the referendum. Dr. Hossein Rouhi-Varan of Tehran Faculty of World Studies believes Iran's referendum proposal is one of the best, although the West doesn't take it seriously.
The Islamic Republic of Iran ardently advocates for a resolution to the ongoing predicament. While Iran has developed a robust strategy and solution, regrettably other stakeholders, particularly Western powers, seem devoid of a clear strategy. Instead, they resort to accusations and fail to uphold the resolutions they themselves endorse. This behavior signals a deliberate attempt to vilify the Islamic Republic of Iran. Iran's proposed solution stands as one of the most progressive and viable plans, aligning rigorously with international standards, both in its political design and practical application. Nevertheless, Iran faces baseless accusations of fostering insecurity, coupled with efforts to bolster the Zionist regime's control over the entire populace in this region. Such actions starkly contradict the foundational principles of democracy and equity.
The second point in the process of the referendum is that representatives of the Palestinian people, be they Muslim, Christian, or Jewish, will themselves hold a management role in all planning stages and in executing the plan. The third point is to facilitate participation by all Palestinians in the referendum, especially displaced Palestinians, a worldwide project will have to be implemented. That would be identifying, conducting a consensus on, and registering the identity of all Palestinian citizens in Palestine and elsewhere. An international organization will be responsible for implementing this project in the presence of Palestinian representatives. The fourth point is an international committee will be put together under supervision of and in collaboration with the United Nations, with Palestinian representatives present. Its purpose would be to execute the said plan and to focus on fundamental Palestinian historic matters, rulership, sovereignty, and of course, Al-Quds. And finally, the fifth point in the process of holding a referendum is that an international fund will be created with help from members of the international community under supervision of the said committee to support and see the plan through. The Israeli regime does make a point of saying Iran wants to wipe Israel off the map. What better way to feed Iranophobia? Occasionally heard such remarks inside the country, that is, however, not Iran's official line. The country's foreign policy is determined and announced by the leader, then the president, foreign ministry, and Supreme National Security Council. The Islamic Republic of Iran supports Palestinians to realize their right to freedom and independence and self-determination and choice governmental system. Freedom and independence were mottos moving forward Iran's own revolution of 1979.
Another issue is human rights, which from the Universal Declaration of Human Rights to other human rights conventions are matters written by Western countries themselves and have nothing to do with the Islamic Republic of Iran. According to these principles concerning human rights, one of the rights that nations have is the right to determine their destiny. Well, the Palestinian people who have lived in this land for millennia have the right to decide their fate and their future.
The person who said Jews occupying Palestine would be thrown into the sea was Jamal Abdel Nasser, the first president of the Republic of Egypt. Saddam Hussein decades later said half of Palestine would be set ablaze, referring to Jewish occupied parts, obviously. It was during Nasser's time that the Six-Day War of 1967 between Israel and an Arab League of Egypt, Syria, Jordan, and Iraq happened. Israel unexpectedly preempted the attack, beginning with the destruction of Egypt's air force on June 5th. Not only was no occupied land freed by the Arab alliance, but Israel occupied yet more. That would be a part of Egypt, Jordan, and Syria.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
There's plenty more to be said, but first a quick media review to give other outlets a chance to get a word in.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to news excerpts from all across the world. Ayatollah Khamenei, Iran's viewpoint does not involve throwing Jews into the sea, Shafar Nad writes. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, affirmed Iran's belief in the necessity of conducting a referendum in Palestine to gauge the people's opinion, emphasizing that Iran's perspective does not entail throwing Jews into the sea. Moving on, finding a way out of the Israel-Palestine crisis, why a referendum might be the only solution to the problem. Tehran Times writes, it seems that at this point, with the absolute risk to God of Israeli officials towards human lives, a referendum might be the only path towards a mutually agreeable future for the Muslims, Christians, and Jews of the region. Iran has clear stance on Palestine, President Raisi says. The Iranian president, Sayyid Ibrahim Raisi, has highlighted the fact that the Islamic Republic of Iran has a clear stance on the issue of Palestine while stressing that the Zionist regime is an occupier. Irna Rice, the Iranian president, Sayyid Ibrahim Raisi, said Iran believes that the strategic and democratic way out of the Palestinian conflict would be one that respects the ideas of all Palestinians, including Muslims, Christians, and Jews. Now, Hamas operation upended U.S. political agenda in region, leader says. Quoting from the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Mahmoud Rice, the historic event of Al-Aqsa Storm is against the Zionist regime, but it's aimed at de-Americanization. This incident literally managed to disrupt the table of American policies in the region, and God willing, if this storm continues, it will wipe up the whole table. That's it from me. Thank you so much for being with us, and see you later.
Iran's leader actually stressed the importance of a referendum on February 5th, 2020, in addressing various groups. Well, that was over half a century later than Nasser. But he did it. Ayatollah Khamenei praised the brave resistance of Palestinians and their freedom fighters against bullying and occupation. But his and Iran's proposed method and means to ending the Israeli occupation is the referendum, which was registered by the UN in Iran's name. It's one of the better solutions.
In advocating for a solution, the Islamic Republic of Iran proposes a comprehensive international referendum that enables widespread participation, elucidating the collective desires and preferences of the concerned populace. Regrettably, Israel staunchly opposes this proposition. Despite the displacement of approximately 70% of the regional Palestinian community from their ancestral lands, a substantial majority still resides within the region. If a referendum were to transpire, the current demographic composition, with nearly 7.3 million Palestinians compared to approximately 6.6 million Jews, indicates a likely outcome favoring the Palestinian cause. Iran's proposal aligns with democratic principles and the global discourse on the importance of respecting public opinion. Notably, any insinuations or rhetoric hinting at violence against Jews, including notions of drowning them, remain utterly divorced from the Islamic Republic of Iran's stance. While historical figures such as the late Jamal Abdel Nasser of Egypt may have employed such language in the past, it's crucial to underscore that Islamic Republic of Iran has never espoused any declarations advocating for the subjugation of Jews at sea or otherwise.
Here's America's solution, proposed during the Trump era by former U.S. President Trump's advisor and son-in-law Jared Kushner, himself Jewish. The deal of the century was named, but acted more as a deal breaker. It was clearly a Zionist plan sugar-coated as American, which at best put other Arab leaders in charge of Palestinian interests. If the so-called deal of the century had worked, Hamas would not have felt pressed into attempting Al-Aqsa flood operation. That was a series of coordinated armed attacks led by Hamas from the Gaza Strip into the Gaza envelope of neighboring now Israeli-occupied territory.
Various perspectives attempt to address the crux of the issue surrounding the Palestinian crisis and its imperative resolution. Iran's proposal advocates for a referendum, seeking a comprehensive approach. Alternatively, proponents of the two-state theory advocate Israel's withdrawal from the West Bank, Gaza Strip, and Jerusalem. However, certain stances, including that of Trump's administration, appear to sideline the urgency of resolving this crisis, prioritizing other concerns. They argue that bolstering relations with Israel and Arab states and recognizing Israel as a legitimate regional entity could potentially mitigate instability. Yet, assessing the efficacy of this proposition demands scrutiny. Has the Zionist regime brought about heightened or diminished security in the region following the Abraham Accords and associated agreements? This inquiry bears significance, considering Israel's continued siege in Gaza, a flagrant violation of international norms that warrants condemnation. Severe suppression persists along the West Bank coast, marked by the tragic toll of the Tufan Al-Aqsa, resulting in over 300 fatalities and more than 1,000 injuries, accompanied by widespread destruction of homes. Such grim realities underscore the fallacy in asserting that diplomatic ties between Israel and select Arab nations herald a pathway to regional peace.
Iran's solution to 70-plus years of conflict, perhaps the longest conflict the UN has had on its plate, is steadfast and simple. Palestine belongs to the Palestinians, as it has been documented in history and antiquity. Therefore, the destiny of Palestine must be decided by the Palestinians. In the democratic world of today, that is the only way. In fact, a referendum can put the West to the test to see how true it is to its democratic values. The proposed referendum would be based on the principle of self-determination, a basic birthright for people to decide their own political, economic, and social system in gaining international status for themselves. Self-determination is a principle recognized by international law to be upheld by governments. Whereas it has not been upheld in regard to Palestinians, neither when the existence of Israeli rule over occupied Palestinian territory was first announced, nor since. United Nations General Assembly Resolution 194 was adopted near the end of the 1947 till 1949 Palestine War, during which time Jewish immigrants to Palestine took over. The territory was known as the start of the war as British-ruled Mandatory Palestine. The war, or this central component of the Nakba, ended in the State of Israel being established by the Jews in May 1948. The creation of Israel was conveniently declared on the last day of the British Mandate. During the said war, around 700,000 Palestinian Arabs were displaced. That was 85% of the total Palestinian Arab population.
Currently, discourse swirls around three prominent blueprints concerning the Palestinian issue: the Islamic Republic of Iran's proposal, the United Nations-endorsed two-state solution backed by American and European support, and Trump's initiative. Notably, Trump's plan, although without any international backing, presents a stark departure from established UN resolutions, marking it as a unilateral endeavor focused on disrupting the Palestinian landscape and wider regional dynamics.
And Resolution 194 defined principles for reaching a final settlement and returning Palestinian refugees to their homes. Article 11 of the resolution resolves that refugees wishing to return to their homes and live at peace with their neighbors should be permitted to do so at the earliest practicable date, and that compensation should be paid for the property of those choosing not to return, and for loss of or damage to property which, under principles of international law or equity, should be made good by the governments or authorities responsible. The resolution also calls for the establishment of the United Nations Conciliation Commission to facilitate peace between Israel and Arab states, continuing the efforts of UN mediator Falke Bernadotte following his assassination. Well, that hasn't gone too well. In fact, given Israel never stopped taking from Palestinians, it would hardly want to compensate them properly for what's lost. No surprise, as it is an occupying force. Zionist Jews crept up as early as the mid-1900s, and now as Israel, they continue their occupation, guns a-blazing. Iran's proposed referendum stresses how it is, first, opposed to occupation, racism, war, and insecurity. Second, its main angle is the participation and opinion of the people of Palestine. Third, it is based on the legal principle of self-determination. And fourth, it is realistic and practicable. To the Islamic Republic of Iran, Palestine is not a tactical matter. Rather, it is ideological and humanitarian, a yardstick of commitment to humane principles or opposition to them. Palestine is, in fact, the embodiment of the pain commonly suffered from cruelty, transgression, and colonialism. That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Please do tune in same times next week and each week after. Don't forget to leave us your comments and topic requests. Till next time, take care.
Your option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
The American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU, has filed a lawsuit challenging a new Texas law that authorizes police to arrest migrants. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. National broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. Civil rights organizations on Tuesday, 19th of December, filed a lawsuit challenging the constitutionality of a new Texas law that would allow police officers to arrest migrants who cross the border illegally and permit local judges to order them to leave the country. The lawsuit filed in a federal court in Austin, Texas, argues that the measure that is set to take effect in March is unconstitutional because the federal government has sole authority over immigration. The American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU, its Texas branch, and the Texas Civil Rights Project sued less than 24 hours after the Republican governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, signed the measure during a ceremony on the U.S.-Mexico border in Brownsville, Texas. The civil rights groups filed a lawsuit on behalf of El Paso County and two immigrant aid groups seeking to block enforcement of the measure, known as SB4, and declare it unlawful. SB4 creates a new state system to regulate immigration that completely bypasses and conflicts with the federal system, the lawsuit says. The lawsuit was filed against the head of the Texas Department of Public Safety, whose troopers could arrest migrants, and the El Paso County District Attorney, whose officers would potentially prosecute cases in that border community. A DPS spokesperson declined to comment in an email on Tuesday, 19th of December, citing the pending litigation. Texas Governor Greg Abbott and other Texas Republicans who support the measure say President Joe Biden's administration isn't doing enough to control the 1,950-mile southern border with Mexico. During Monday's ceremony where he signed the measure, Governor Greg Abbott expressed confidence that it would withstand legal challenges. According to the lawsuit, DPS Director Steve McGraw told lawmakers that his agency estimates approximately 72,000 arrests will be made each year under the measure. The new law allows any Texas law enforcement officer to arrest people who are suspected of entering the country illegally. Once in custody, They could either agree to a Texas judge's order to leave the United States or be prosecuted on misdemeanor charges of illegally entering the country. Migrants who don't leave could face arrest again under most serious felony charges. Opponents have called the measure the most dramatic attempt by a state to police immigration since the 2010 Arizona law, denounced by critics as the Show Me Your Papers bill, that was largely struck down by the U.S. Supreme Court. The lawsuit cites the 2012 Supreme Court decision on the Arizona law, which stated the federal government has exclusive power over immigration. The bill overrides bedrock constitutional principles and flouts federal immigration law while harming Texans, in particular, brown and black communities in Texas. Adriana Pinon, legal director of the ACLU of Texas, said in a statement. Earlier, on Tuesday, 19th of December, the American Civil Liberties Union affiliates in Oklahoma, New Mexico, Arkansas, Louisiana, Arizona, Texas, and San Diego, California, and Imperial counties in California issued a travel advisory warning of a possible threat to travelers' civil and constitutional rights violations when passing through Texas. National broadcaster ABC News has also covered the same story. The American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU of Texas, filed a lawsuit in federal court on Tuesday, 19th of December, challenging the state's new law that authorizes Texas law enforcement to detain and arrest migrants suspected of crossing the southern border with Mexico illegally. The lawsuit was filed on behalf of the County of El Paso and advocacy groups Las Americas Immigrant Advocacy Center, and American Gateways. It names Steve McGraw, director of the Texas Department of Public Safety, and Bill Hicks, a district attorney for the 34th District of Texas, as defendants. By creating new state crimes, including one of illegal entry, SB4 allows local and state law enforcement officials to arrest migrants suspected of crossing into the state illegally from Mexico, and allows judges to direct migrants to be transported to ports of entry and ordered to return to Mexico, regardless of their nationality. The state crime carries a penalty of up to 6 months in jail for the first offenses and up to 20 years in jail for repeat offenders. The law is the latest attempt by Texas Governor Greg Abbott, a hardline Republican opponent of the Biden administration's immigration policies, to enact and enforce immigration laws. President Joe Biden has repeatedly refused to enforce federal immigration laws already on the books and do his job to secure the border, Governor Greg Abbott said in a statement after a lawsuit was filed on Tuesday. In his absence, Texas has the constitutional authority to ensure our border through historic laws like SB4. Texas will take this fight all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court if necessary to protect Texans from President Biden's dangerous open border policies. Representatives for Steve McGraw and Hicks did not immediately respond to ABC News' request for a comment. Texas Governor Greg Abbott said at a signing ceremony on Monday, set up against the backdrop of the border wall in Brownsville, Texas, he said the goal of Senate Bill 4 is to stop the tidal wave of illegal entry into Texas. For months, immigration advocates have claimed that the new law could cause widespread racial profiling and the imprisonment of migrants who may have crossed into the country in between ports of entry, but have the legal right to stay while their asylum claims are being processed. The law does not allocate funding or mandate training for law enforcement officials who will now be tasked with enforcing immigration law. Immigration rights advocates have said this would leave the fate of a migrant's path to asylum in the hands of untrained officers. There is no U.S. federal analog to a lone officer in their own discretion escorting someone to the border and saying, "Get out." That is a very scary prospect that is categorically different from what the federal government does. In addition to that, in the federal system, people would be able to present their claims to an immigration officer and an immigration judge. David Donati, a senior staff attorney with the Texas American Civil Liberties Union, told ABC News in November that the bill was passed by the Texas House of the Representatives. In the court filing, the lawyers representing the county of El Paso, which has grappled with constant migrant surges, say SB 4 would pose a threat to mixed-status families who are an integral part of the El Paso community and pay an approximate $591 million in taxes. The county also claims it would overburden its county jail, the main detention facility for undocumented immigrants, by adding an additional 8,000 arrests per year. Given that number of anticipated arrests, the county will incur nearly $24 million per year in additional costs to simply house these additional defendants. The county estimates it will need to authorize and spend a further $162 million to build additional jail and bed space, the complaint obtained by ABC News has confirmed.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khamenei, in a meeting with Iran's sports champions and medalists of the 2023 Asian Games and the Asian Paragames. This meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniyeh on November 22, 2023. One of the responsibilities of the honorable sports officials is to attend to the living standards of the athletes, which has also been spoken about here. The things that the honorable minister said regarding housing, employment, and the like are all very good, provided these matters are followed up and seriously pursued. We cannot expect our athletes to make us proud in world competitions if we do not attend to their needs accordingly. Actions must be taken so that our athletes can rest assured that they will have a suitable standard of living. In my opinion, the best way to do this is to pursue the issues of employment, housing, and the like, which have been mentioned. One of the duties of the officials is to adopt a fatherly attitude towards the athletes.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
I asked the country's officials to have close, friendly meetings with the athletes in all sporting fields. Of course, some sports are paid attention to more than others, and some sports are barely mentioned at all. But officials must attend the athletes of all the various sports, have meetings with them, hear what they have to say, listen to their complaints, hear their requests, and respond to them. This is what I'm asking for from the officials, and my words are addressed to the sports officials. Now, I would like to say a few words to you, our dear athletes. Athletes are role models for many young people. Our dear young athlete, your behavior, your actions, your words, and your lifestyle are often matters that many of our youth look up to. Well, that gives you a heavier responsibility. When you are a role model, you can lead a part of the country's youth to the right path and make them happy and prosperous. But God forbid, the opposite is also possible. Therefore, your behavior is very important. One word from an athlete, one action from an athlete, whether it be in the sports field or elsewhere, can have a constructive effect on young people. And that makes your responsibility even greater.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Erubashavet, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian traveled to Qatar in his fourth visit since Israel's onslaught on Gaza began over 70 days ago. He met with his Qatari counterpart, Mohammed bin Abdulrahman bin Jassim Al Thani, discussing bilateral ties as well as recent developments in the region.
We talked about the Palestinian issue. We also discussed bilateral relations between Iran and Qatar, including political and economic ties.
During his visit, Amir Abdullahian also met with the leader of Palestine's Hamas resistance movement, Ismail Haniyeh, to discuss a possible ceasefire in Gaza as the Israeli regime continues its genocidal campaign in the besieged strip.
Hamas officials, who are the main party in this story on behalf of the Palestinian nation, believe that reaching any agreement with Israel is not a real thing in the shadow of the continuation of the killing of women and children. And if the U.S. and Israel are serious about an agreement, they can start dialogue after establishing a ceasefire.
For his part, Hania said that despite all the relentless pressure from Israel, the resistance has remained steadfast on the ground and has managed to inflict heavy losses on the occupying regime.
The military aggression of the Zionist regime against the people of Gaza is unprecedented, and we are witnessing a massive amount of attacks from air, sea, and land against the residents of Gaza. The Zionist regime and its allies thought they could destroy the resistance and that the resistance would be forced to raise the white flag. But after 75 days of mass killings and war crimes by the Zionist regime, the resistance is still firm and steady on the ground and has inflicted heavy losses on the Zionist regime.
The Iranian foreign minister has stated that his visit came following recent developments that show the whole region is seeking a stable ceasefire in Gaza.